If a man says, I'll see you at 6 p.m., he typically means it literally. If a man tells you that he used to be the best basketball player at his college, you take it at face value, even if he may be exaggerating a little bit. If a man says he dislikes you, then it means he's not your friend anymore and you move on. Women communicate more in feelings, and specifically through intentions. Sure, they still pay attention to the facts and stories going on the surface, but what's actually communicated to them is the intention and the feeling underneath. This is called subcommunication. This is why your girlfriend can get upset and tell you she hates it when you spend time with your friends one night, and then the next insist that you go to your weekly bowling league and not see any contradiction in her statements. On the first night, she felt like you weren't paying enough attention to her. On the second, she felt secure with you and wants you to be happy. Needless to say, this sort of stuff often confuses the hell out of men, often for an entire lifetime. This is why guys often get together and refer to women as crazy, psychotic, unstable, irrational, or total bitches. The fact that men are oblivious to the emotions and intentions that underline everything women say often makes women feel like men are heartless, cold assholes, selfish jerks, or that they don't listen. We listen, we just don't speak the same language. This is also why a man can study and learn the best pickup lines and routines, walk into a bar and deliver them perfectly, and have none of them work. The woman hears his lines, but she's listening to his intentions. And if his intentions are saying, I want to impress you, please like me, then it doesn't matter how good the lines are, she's not going to listen to him. On the other hand, if a man has the right intentions, then he can get away saying just about anything. In chapters 4, I told the story of the time my friend walked around asking women if he could pee in their butt. Obviously, his words were absolutely ridiculous, and all of the women he approached, both the ones who rejected him and the one he went home with, didn't give his words much credit. But his intention was loud and clear. I don't care what you think. I want to have fun tonight, and my idea of fun is a little extreme. Obviously, this scared a few women off, but once he found one who liked his intentions, she latched on quickly and hard. That's an extreme example, but here's another, much more common example. Pickup theory often tells men not to compliment a woman too early or too often. The reason for this is that most men who read pickup theory have poor intentions. They're needy and looking to validate themselves through sex or female affection. So when a man compliments a woman out of neediness, it's going to make a woman feel uncomfortable and objectified. Now, if a man compliments a woman out of genuine appreciation for her, she's going to hear his intention and be genuinely appreciative of him as well. Teasing and so-called nagging of women is another great example. Many men, when they first begin trying to flirt with women, they tease or they nag them. Ask yourself this. What's the difference between a tease and an insult? Both are derogatory statements. Both incorporate humor. So what's the difference? Intention. Teasing is done with a fun and positive intention. Insults are done with a negative intention. Or what's the difference between sharing yourself and bragging? Let's say you play in a successful rock band. What's the difference between sharing your life experience with a woman, which is attractive, and bragging to her, which is unattractive? Hopefully you're figuring it out by now. It's intention. What is your intention? Are you trying to impress her, which is needy, and therefore bragging? Or are you sharing yourself, which is vulnerability, and therefore attracting her? This relates directly back to everything we talked about in Chapter 2 in regards to investment, neediness, and validation. A man who is highly needy will have intentions dominated by seeking validation and therefore be unattractive regardless of just about anything he says. A man who is not needy will have intentions dominated by vulnerability and will therefore be attractive regardless of what he says. Obviously, there are technical considerations in how you communicate to people, which we'll cover throughout this chapter and next. But the overarching point is that what you actually talk about has far less to do with your results than your intentions. In a way, we've come full circle, and hopefully now you understand why the book began the way it did. Everything in this chapter and next is going to assume that you are acting based on the right intentions. As mentioned in Chapter 6, if you seem to get rejected by women no matter what you do or say, then chances are your intentions are poor and you're unaware of it. If that's the case, then I recommend taking a long, hard look at why you're approaching women and your beliefs and feelings about women to see how you're being perceived by them. Remember, women don't see your features, they see how you present yourself. They don't hear your words, they hear your intentions. If you suffer from chronic rejection, then you are presenting yourself poorly and or have poor intentions. In both cases, you're needy and therefore will always be seen as unattractive until you take care of it. Subsection: creepiness. The number one fear deterring men from openly expressing their sexual desires towards women is a fear of being perceived as creepy. There are a lot of reasons for this, and I'll spare you the anti-feminism rant that demonized male sexuality in the 1960s and 70s. The point is, most modern men have a legitimate fear of being creepy. But before we jump into what creepiness is exactly and what women mean when they complain about it, I need to give the same type of painful truth serum I gave for rejection. There's no such thing as a man who is good with women who isn't also creepy sometimes. The fact of life is that if you're a man who expresses his sexuality freely, and you should be, some women, some of the time, are going to find you creepy. It's simply unavoidable. No matter how cool, rich, good-looking, and charming you are, at some point, somewhere, a girl's going to be creeped out by you. So as a friend of mine says, give yourself permission to be creepy. There's no other way. And look, it's not the end of the world. There's no creepy police who come and handcuff you and take you away for creeping on some girls every now and then. Hell, once you let loose, you may find, as many men do, that being creepy can be funny sometimes. Creepiness is one of these vague concepts that everyone knows but no one can really put into words. If you ask girls what creepiness is, they'll give you roundabout answers that inevitably fall into examples of creepiness rather than an actual definition. Of course, their examples are all over the map and seem to have absolutely no rhyme or reason. For what it's worth, asking a bunch of female friends this question over the years, I've gotten examples of creepiness that have spanned from he had dainty hands to he sips his drink like a girl to putting too many smileys in text messages. As often is the case, women are terrible authorities on why they like or dislike something. All they know is that they like or dislike it. Creepiness. The definition. Behaving in a way that threatens a woman sexually or causes her to feel insecure. Remember, the basis of all female attraction comes back to security. It's why she looks for men less needy than herself. It's also why she looks for men who speak and behave in line with their intentions. The further you get out of line with your intentions, the creepier you become. For instance, if you approach a woman and stand there and talk about the weather, but she can tell that you're horny and want to rail her like a jackhammer, then you will come across as a little creepy. Your actions and words are completely out of line with your intentions. If you approach a woman and stare at her breasts the entire time you speak to her, you'll also be creepy. Even if you tell her honestly, you have great tits, you will be creepy. Not for lack of intention, but because she doesn't know you and most women are not comfortable being sexual around men they don't know. This is why vulnerability is so huge. When you're vulnerable around someone you don't know, you'll inspire them to trust you and become more vulnerable around you. The more vulnerable a woman is willing to be around you, the less likely you will be to creep her out. Caveat number one, vulnerability is still subject to the right intentions. If you tell a girl a sob story for no other reason than to get her to feel sorry for you and sleep with you, then guess what? You're still creepy. Caveat two, sex can be viewed as the ultimate act of vulnerability for a woman. The more vulnerable you make yourself around her, by leading, by sharing your intentions, by being honest, the more she will trust you and become vulnerable in return. Sex is a side effect of that vulnerability. Paradoxically, the way to interact with women is in a vulnerable way, and therefore the way to combat creepiness is to accept that some women will find you creepy some of the time. Just as with rejection, the more you're willing to risk it, the less it will happen. The more comfortable you are with women finding you creepy, and the more uninhibited and vulnerable your actions and words are around women, the less likely they will be to find you creepy. The more reserved and closed up you are about your intentions, the more you attempt to manipulate her and mislead her about what you want and who you are, the more likely you are to become creepy. Obviously, there are technical aspects of communication that affect this as well. Bad body language, strange conversation topics, uncalibrated humor, inappropriate touching. These things can all make you creepy even with the best of intentions. This is why I say that at some point, you have to accept that you're going to creep some women out, and that's okay. Because the alternative is to hide your sexuality and hope a woman comes to you. And well, we all know how well that works out. Subsection, the flirting formula. Flirting is the opposite of creepiness. Flirting is expressing your sexuality in a way that is attractive and fun to women. Sometimes the sexuality of your behavior is overt. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's implied. But when done correctly, it's accepted and appreciated by women. If you research dating advice and pickup tips, you'll find dozens and dozens and dozens of methods of building attraction with women. Some of the more popular ones include teasing, bantering, negging, cocky funny, push-pull, qualification, statements of interest, false disqualifiers, role-playing, leading and pacing, eliciting values, magic tricks, cold reading, false takeaways, word games, hand games, betting and competition, etc. Chances are you've read or are familiar with at least a few of these concepts. If you don't know what most of them are, then good, don't worry about it. No, I'm serious, don't worry about it, because they all follow the same basic pattern. Flirting. Expressing your sexuality to a woman in a non-needy manner, eliciting her to become more attracted to you. In a nutshell, what a lot of men refer to as game is their ability to flirt with women, how well they can express their sexuality to women with positive responses. If they can do it often, they have game. The tactics or strategies used to do this, such as teasing, all do this in their own ways, but they all follow the same pattern. For the sake of time and space, and boredom, I'll be grouping most methods of flirting into two different groups, teasing and leading. Both teasing and leading types of flirting, whether it's nagging, false takeaways, or role-playing, follow the same basic formula. They all involve breaking rapport. Teasing-type flirting breaks rapport verbally. Teases involve saying derogatory comments about someone in a funny or pleasant way. Family members tease each other, friends tease each other, and men and women tease each other when they're sexually interested in one another. Your teasing could be anything from making fun of her shoes to giving her a hard time about her drinking habits to telling her that she looks like Goldilocks. Teasing is useful because you can often stack a compliment into it and be able to display sexual interest without actually complimenting her. For instance, you could say, "You know, if you weren't so cute, I'd ditch you for saying that." This is why teasing is so popular within the pickup artist and pickup tactics crowd. It allows them to demonstrate their interest while maintaining the perception of non-neediness. Teasing with the proper intention, fun and adoration, conveys the sense that you are non-needy and less invested in her. When a man shows he's willing to break rapport with a girl, he's demonstrating vulnerability and therefore a lack of neediness and investment. The reason is that every time you break rapport with a girl, you're opening yourself up to be rejected. This subcommunicates a willingness to lose her, which then subcommunicates non-neediness and less investment. Often dropping even one tease into an otherwise normal and boring conversation will often spark a lot of attraction and interest from a girl. For this reason, teasing is often the easiest and quickest way for a guy who's inexperienced with women to generate attraction from them. Cultivating genuine and long-lasting attraction, as up until now, is a long-term process that requires investing in yourself, your identity, and overcoming your fears over a long period of time. But if one learns to tease well, they can leave the house right now and potentially spark a girl to become attracted to them, even if it's only for a minute. Teasing-type flirting isn't the end-all be-all, though, despite what some dating advice may proclaim. You can tease a girl into becoming a little more interested in you. You can even tease her into wanting to kiss you, but you can rarely tease her all the way to the sack, and you definitely can't tease her into a relationship. Eventually, you'll be forced to open up and connect with her on an emotional level and show some vulnerability. But even then, I encourage men to tease and flirt with all women intermittently, even friends or girls they're not interested in. It adds a fun sexual component and sparks more emotional excitement in any of your male-female relationships, and you'll quickly find out that women are flirting addicts. They love it. Also, it's important to interpret her actions to the teasing correctly. A lot of women will feign anger or offense when really they enjoy it. Some women will tease you right back. Some won't tease you back, but insult you and get defensive. Others will become legitimately offended. Once again, you must speak the language of intentions. One girl may say she's offended, but actually be smiling and become energized and engage you more than she did before. Another girl may say she's offended and become noticeably sad and not know how to respond to you. It's important to pay attention to how women respond to your teases and adjust accordingly. Not every girl reacts well to teasing, and they don't react well in every situation, so use your discretion. The second type of flirting is what I call leading type flirting. Leading is a little more subtle, but far more powerful than teasing. Just like teasing, leading demands that you stick your neck out and make yourself vulnerable. But leading does it by inviting her to comply with an action you take. Think of it as breaking rapport, but instead of doing it by joking, you're doing it by inviting her to take part with you in whatever you choose to say or do. Some good examples of leading type flirting are taking her by the hand and moving her somewhere else, statements of sexual interest, physically touching her, asking her personal questions about herself, inviting her out on a date or home with you. Like teasing, leading must be done with the right intentions, honest and non-needy. Genuine demonstrations of affection and interest are generally the most welcome and appreciated expressions of sexuality for women. Leading and teasing often intertwine with one another. You may be tease-type flirting with a girl by role-playing that she's your housekeeper and she's in trouble for making such a mess, You then lead her to a room of a party where you two can be alone, and you begin kissing her. Another classic situation is flinging harsh teases immediately followed by sincere compliments. For instance, you can make fun of how indecisive she is ordering her drinks and tell her that indecisiveness isn't going to lead her anywhere in life. When she responds with some indignation, you could then compliment her on how beautiful her eyes are when she's mad. This absolutely bamboozles women in a very, very good way. They don't know whether to laugh or cry, hug you or hit you, and ultimately that conflict of emotions turns them on. It's a lot of fun. Try it. If teasing and leading both break rapport with the woman you're talking to, the next part of the formula involves her regaining rapport. She does this either by qualifying herself, in the cases of teasing, or by complying, in the case of leading. If she does not reestablish rapport with you, then it means that she is not attracted to you, and you've been rejected. End of story. For instance, if you tease a girl about her shoes and she defends herself or says something like, "Yeah, they are kind of lame, aren't they?" then she's attempting to reestablish rapport with you. She's qualifying herself. Basically, what's being subcommunicated is that you are less invested in her by the teasing and that she's more invested in you by qualifying herself. This may or may not actually be true, but it's the perception that flirting creates between you two and why flirting generates attraction. For instance, if you tease her about her shoes and she becomes offended and decides you're an asshole, well, then that means she's not qualifying herself, she's not reestablishing rapport, and no attraction's being generated. Either your tease came with the wrong intention, was delivered poorly, or she's simply not interested in you. The reason isn't that important. Leading behavior leads to compliance. It's the exact same process as teasing, except instead of verbal, it's through actions. Let's say you take a girl by the hand and say, "Let's go get a drink." If she complies and comes with you, that indicates a lot of attraction. The vulnerability and intention you express by leading her indicates non-neediness and low investment. Her compliance indicates higher investment. This creates attraction. If she says, "Wait, I need to stay with my friends," then it indicates lower investment and does not generate attraction. Some people argue that if she complies with stuff like this because she's attracted, not that the compliance creates attraction itself. The answer is both are true. If a girl's already attracted to you, she'll be apt to follow your lead more and more. But the leading, more specifically the demonstration of vulnerability and non-neediness by making your intentions open and transparent, generates attraction in her as well. The actual act of having a man taking her by the hand and leading her to where he wants her will turn her on in and of itself. Finally, a lot of men get confused when women tease them or lead them in the interaction. A lot of men get insecure in this situation and begin trying to out-tease the teaser or out-lead the leader. Other men get super sensitive about teasing and see them as shit tests and get defensive, which absolutely destroys any attraction there may have once been. Here's my take on these situations. You'll rarely have a woman who openly teases or leads you, but when you do, don't overcomplicate things. She's flirting with you because she likes you. That's why people flirt with each other, because they like each other. She's basically giving you a free pass and doing the work for you. So kick back and relax and let the teases and leading come from her as long as she's willing. Who knows, if you're lucky, she may tease and lead you all the way to the bedroom. And what if you're not attracted to her? Simple. Don't qualify yourself or establish rapport. When she teases you or tries to lead, simply don't go along with it. No harm, no foul. It's all part of the game. Ultimately, the way you flirt is less important than the fact that you do it. At some point, if you want to become intimate and sexual with a woman, you're going to have to express your sexual interest in her, and you're going to have to do it in a positive way that she'll be receptive to. Failure to act on your sexual desires will lead you straight to the friend zone with almost all women, and back to a rampant frustration that brought you here in the first place. Of course, this is easier said than done, especially for some of you. Flirting requires showing vulnerability, risking rejection, or possibly offending somebody. And at first, you may flirt in needy and supplicant ways, repelling women even faster than you did when you were just a nice guy. But eventually, exposing yourself and your sexual desires will force you to be less invested, less needy, more dominant, and more attractive. The teasing will help by creating the perception of non-neediness, and the leading will make women more and more receptive to your eventual sexual advances. But unlike fears or living an attractive lifestyle, flirting and expressing your sexuality requires communicating effectively. It requires competency at certain social behaviors, and social behaviors, like any other behavior, aren't simply picked up overnight. They must be built and honed through practice, the specifics of which will be covered in the next chapter. Subsection: Developing an Emotional Connection. An oft unspoken aspect of seduction that many many men feel uncomfortable talking about is emotional connection. Most men gloss over emotional connection for a couple reasons. One, men tend to be all about the stat sheet and high-fiving that comes along with it. And two, most men who feel a need to sleep with a lot of women have a lot of emotional baggage that they prefer to avoid than to actually deal with. Your ability to connect with a woman emotionally is proportional to how self-aware you are of your own emotional processes and motivations. As described in Chapter 3, self-awareness and vulnerability will actually cause you to behave in a less needy manner. But self-awareness and vulnerability also give her the chance to know the real you, to trust you and to open her own emotions up to you. Ultimately, this is what every woman wants. If you look at romance novels, basically the female version of porn, they all follow more or less the exact same pattern. Hard and rugged bad boy type male hero is troubled but strong, and as he slowly opens up and shares his true emotions and desires with the heroine, she's able to support him and save him and ultimately fall in love with him. Of course, they live happily ever after. This is more or less the blueprint of seduction. Strong, high status, attractive exterior, which is lifestyle and looks, fearless and able to open up and share your vulnerable side with her, and theoretically only her. Women get weak in the knees for this, and it's not even conscious in them most of the time. All that's required is a certain level of emotional awareness and vulnerability in your interactions. And let me tell you, emotional connections are powerful, far more powerful than any sort of tactics or tricks you may learn in other seduction books. When you connect with women emotionally, they really open up to you in ways that you can't imagine. Your intentions and your relationships with them become these rich and unique experiences that can never be replicated. The sex is far better, and all mind games, flakes, and ambivalence goes out the window. I've heard abortion stories, rape stories, molestation stories, had girls cry in my arms the night they met me, had girls thank me for having sex with them, tell me that a one-night stand with me meant more to them than entire relationships, had them offer to buy me plane tickets to see me again. I've had three different women give me their virginities because they trusted me and the experience that they would have with me. A lot of pickup and dating advice is what I call attraction obsessed. It is a constant, incessant harping on being the most attractive alpha guy possible, usually by employing all sorts of tricks, games, tactics, techniques, manipulation, and other falsehoods. Attraction obsession comes from a place of insecurity. It seeks validation. It's needy behavior and therefore self-sabotaging in the long run. It's not about attraction. She's attracted to 10 guys a day but doesn't sleep with any of them. Feeling slutty isn't about I put out on the first date thing. It's not about a number of dates, hours spent together, how many dinners you bought her. Feeling slutty is about sleeping with a guy who doesn't care about her. If she doesn't trust you or isn't 100% convinced that you really like her and care about her, then she's not going to do it. And if she does, then she'll regret it and feel dirty. So how do you develop deep and long-lasting emotional connections with women? Connections that will blow your mind and heart away as well as hers too? Connections that will give you some of the best nights and sex of your life? I'm glad you asked. Here's the basic pattern, and you should recognize a lot of overlap here with Chapter 3. First, becoming aware of your own emotions, motivations, and life story. Secondly, taking the lead by sharing those emotions, motivations, and life story first. Thirdly, sharing first creates trust and encourages her to open up and share herself in return. And finally, ideally, the more this goes on, the more personal the stories become and the deeper the emotions in which you connect with. For instance, take a simple conversation about music you two like. She likes Jay-Z. You like Jay-Z as well. Instead of just saying, I really like Jay-Z, you can expand and talk about why you like Jay-Z. Instead of just, I like Jay-Z, you could say, I love Jay-Z. He always reminds me of my brother. My brother used to drive me to school for years, and he would blast Jay-Z every morning. Looking back, it meant a lot to me, my brother taking care of me like that. My dad was always too busy. So Jay-Z always reminds me of that. Those moments of appreciation that you don't recognize until years later. Wow, that's a little intense, right? But that's the idea. If you feel uncomfortable just reading that and imagining yourself saying something like that, then that's good. That's vulnerability. And ultimately, that's what's going to make you an attractive man who can emotionally connect with women. Things can go even deeper as well. For instance, it's one thing to talk about jobs. Maybe she's a lawyer and came from a poor immigrant background. It may be obvious that she worked very hard and is very ambitious. You could relate to that by sharing how when you were a teenager, a couple of your friends were injured in a car accident, how that affected you, scared you straight, and helped you become grateful for every day you have, how you started taking advantage of your time and potential and worked very hard to get where you are. Whatever it is, open up about it. Challenge yourself to go one level deeper. And the most important rule of emotional connection is to relate to feelings, not facts. Seduction is about feelings, not facts. This is why you can often meet a woman who shares a lot in common with you, same hometown, same occupation, same interest, lives on the same street, and have no connection or chemistry whatsoever. But then you can meet a woman who has lived an entirely different life from you. But if you can relate to the emotional struggles and emotional realities that she's gone through, you can connect very deeply. She may be a rich girl whose father died when she was 8 and was sent to boarding school, and you may have had to work your way up from poverty in India and then move to the USA. But emotionally, you can relate very deeply. The alienation from home, growing up with no sense of family or support other than achievement, feeling isolated by your talent. Everybody on this planet shares a handful of universal emotional realities. Ambition, shame, alienation, loneliness, achievement, regret, hardship, friendship, love, heartbreak. We've all experienced them. The facts change, the feelings are the same. I don't care how shallow or dumb or weird or annoying she has it somewhere in her. It's your job to dig it out and connect with it. That's where the gold is. That's where the real magic happens. Challenge yourself to find it, because once you do, you'll never go back. Subsection: Building and Breaking Habits. Your communication skills are a series of overlapping habits. You have habits of when and how you make eye contact with people, how you speak, your voice inflections, what kind of questions you ask, whether you lead the conversation or follow, whether you're curious about others or self-centered, how often you smile, look away, or laugh. The list goes on and on. If you have trouble relating to people, particularly women, then chances are you've developed communication habits that are unattractive and not serving you well. Some of these habits are simple to learn and fix, such as making more eye contact. Others are more difficult to notice and harder to fix, for instance, deferring to the opinion of others when making an observation. The specific habits that are attractive and unattractive will be covered extensively in the next chapter, but for now I want to wrap up this chapter by going over the process in which to build and break these habits. A lot of men get the wrong idea. They'll read some dating advice saying something like, "Touch her on the arm when you smile at her." Then they'll go out and do it, and it'll feel very awkward and stilted, so they never do it again. The reason it feels awkward and stilted is because they've never done it before. It's not a habit for them yet. In fact, not touching a woman when they smile is a habit, and they're trying to break it. And habits are hard to break. They take time, and you have to do them repeatedly. The trick is to identify the good or bad habits you want to build or break and focus on them consciously until they're second nature. This actually doesn't take a long time. For simple things such as eye contact or posture, it may only take a few weeks. Things such as touching or making statements instead of questions, it may even be shorter. Either way, the more you implement the habits, the better your reactions from women will be, therefore increasing your motivation to implement the habits further. Basically, what I'm saying here is that everything described in the next chapter is not an overnight fix. You have to go out and do it over and over again. Not 1,000 times, maybe not 100 times, but repeatedly. And just as with desensitizing yourself to your anxieties, you want to focus on one at a time, two at most. Another problem many men run into is that they learn that they need to make strong eye contact, lean back on their back foot, touch on the approach, make observations about her features, qualify her on her passions, smile when she smiles, and touch her when she laughs, all at the same time. So they go out and get completely jumbled up and don't know what to focus on and are unable to focus on all the behaviors at the same time. It often actually makes their interactions go worse. We won't be doing that. In fact, I think a lot of the minute habits listed above are overrated. I'll be presenting attractive social habits in more general terms so that, one, you have fewer things clogging your brain, and two, there will still be room to express your unique personality and tics. You'll also notice that many of these habits are directly correlated with overcoming fears and anxieties as discussed in chapters 10 and 11. For instance, developing the habit of touching a woman when you make a joke relates directly to an anxiety many men feel about showing sexual interest. The habit of smiling when you introduce yourself to somebody ties into the anxiety of meeting new people. Many of these behaviors are linked to your anxieties, and the interesting thing is that you can resolve them from both sides. Fixing your outer behaviors will help you alleviate your internal anxiety, and alleviating your internal anxiety will help fix up your outer behaviors. As always, a lack of fear and attractive social behaviors are rooted in comfort with making yourself vulnerable, an honest expression of your desires, and ultimately comes from a non-needy identity that is not invested in what others think. Chapter 13, How to Be Charming. Quote, "Let us make a special effort to stop communicating with each other, so we can have some real conversation." Mark Twain. Sometimes, even if your intentions are in line and you're expressing yourself openly, people won't always perceive you correctly. Communication is always up for interpretation. Therefore, there's always going to be a risk that you're either being misunderstood or people are assuming things about you. For instance, you may ask a girl out for coffee, but perhaps she doesn't hear you clearly, or perhaps she's not very adept at knowing when men are hitting on her, so she may not be aware of your sexual interest. Or maybe you compliment a girl on her dress, but for whatever reason, your tonality and facial expression aren't clear, and she thinks you're being sarcastic. Maybe she's insecure and very touchy about men complimenting her, so she responds negatively. In the long run, misunderstandings and miscommunication is unavoidable. No matter how clear and how charming you are, there are always going to be women who misinterpret what you say to them as well as your intentions. This is a fact of life and something that you have to get used to. But what we can control is how efficiently and openly we communicate by learning clear and effective communication skills. The better our communication skills, the more clearly we can express ourselves and show sexual interest. The more clearly we express ourselves and show sexual interest, the more likely we'll be able to connect with women in a sexual and emotional way. It's sad but true. There are often situations where a woman will be sexually interested in a man, but their failure to communicate their intentions to one another clearly will derail the entire interaction. There's no excuse to let this happen. And as with all the three fundamentals, you'll find that clear communication will enhance other areas of your life, your professional relationships, your family relationships, your friendships, your networking abilities, just as much as it enhances your romantic relationships and your ability to meet and attract women. Subsection. First impressions. First impressions are crucial. Studies show that we base the majority of our perception of people in the first few minutes we spend with them. This initial perception can extend and influence our relationship to the person for weeks or even months afterwards. If I look at dozens of women I've been with, just about all of them, I'd estimate at least 90%, it felt on within the first few minutes of the interaction. We clicked and that first impression of each other led to the potential of sex further down the line. The biggest misconceptions about first impressions is being overly concerned with what to say to women, a woman when you meet her. This is secondary, and hopefully by this point in the book, I don't have to explain why. You can ask a girl how her day is going, or say the most perceptive or witty thing ever to her in the first few minutes, but her impression of you is largely going to be based on how you present yourself, which is looks and lifestyles, chapters 8 and 9, your level of neediness, anxiety, chapters 10 and 11, and your ability to communicate clearly. What actually comes out of your mouth is going to be forgotten or completely irrelevant very, very quickly. With that in mind, here are guidelines for making a good impression. Do not startle her or scare her when you approach her. This is possibly the only death knell for approaching women. If you startle her or scare her when she first meets you, in my experience, there is almost absolutely nothing you can do to recover. You're immediately labeled creepy, and she'll do anything possible to get out of the situation. Even if she's polite and talks to you for a minute, chances are she's never going to open up to you and trust you. Typical ways guys startle or scare women upon the approach is by approaching them from behind, which is a huge no-no, grabbing them violently, screaming at them, or saying something extremely offensive or weird. When in doubt on how to approach a woman, simply walk up and introduce yourself and explain to her that you wanted to meet her. I know this sounds really drab and boring, but remember, it's not about entertaining her, it's about exuding non-neediness and genuine interest in her. During the day, I often prep the introduction by saying something like, "Excuse me, this is kind of random." Also during the day, I usually tell them that I think that they're cute. Guys often ask me what my favorite opener or pickup line is. Literally 80% of my approaches begin with, "Hi, my name is Mark." I'm not kidding, and they work. It's all about how you approach her, not what you approach her with. In my experience, the cuter and more creative guys try to get with their opening lines, the more likely they are to A, say something weird, and B, the more likely they are to come off as needy. Think about it. If you sit around for 10 minutes trying to think of what to say to a girl so that she'll like you, how is that not needy? She'll sense this. In fact, it's kind of amazing. Women really do seem to have a sixth sense. I've noticed that the longer I hesitate and stare at a girl before I approach her, the more likely I am to be rejected. Best approaches I ever do are when I don't think about it, and I spontaneously just walk up and say hello. Don't don't linger. If you linger and hover around her, it's almost guaranteed that the approach will feel awkward and forced. Imagine a straight line between you and her, and when you're ready to go, follow that straight line until you're standing right in front of her. Don't stand around and kick the dirt at your feet trying to work up the nerve to stand right next to her. Smile. Always smile. Don't smile like, holy shit, I just won the lottery smile, but smile as in you're a nice, friendly person smile. Lean back. Stand up tall. Speak loudly, yet clearly. Make strong eye contact. Introduce yourself and stick out your hand. Give a firm handshake. This is called being a confident human being. If you follow the guidelines above, around 70 to 80% of the women you approach should either give you a neutral or positive response, assuming that you're not in an extreme environment. If you've handled your looks and lifestyle from Chapter 8, then expect even a higher percentage. I'd say that about 80% of women I approach with, "Hi, I'm Mark," respond either neutrally or warmly. And that's regardless of where I am. Nightclub, coffee shop, library, hotel bar. It's where to go after the initial impression where things get tricky and where you'll get most of your rejections. Unless you're approaching women in a very polarizing way, in which case you're welcoming rejection, you really should not be getting massive rejections early on. If you are getting many rejections right on the initial approach, then it's probably one of the following three things. 1. You're presenting yourself poorly, i.e. you dress very poorly, you have bad looks, bad style, bad body language. Review chapters 8 and 9 again. 2. Your intentions are off. You're approaching for the wrong reasons. The wrong reasons include anything that is not, "She's cute and I want to meet her." That means approaching for statistics, approaching for a skill set, approaching to impress your friends, approaching because you want to live up to a bunch of crap you read on the internet. These are all wrong reasons to approach. When you see a hot girl, you should be motivated by nothing but your desire to have sex with her. That's it. If you have trouble finding that motivation, refer back to the section on sexual anxiety on Chapter 10. 3. You're not following one of the guidelines above. You're startling her. You're trying too hard to be clever or interesting. Or you're doing something that's technically wrong. Not looking her in the eye, not smiling, etc. Like I said, if you have everything together, you should not be getting rejected often on the opener. I've coached guys who still had some major flaws, neediness, poor looks, nervousness, but having them follow the guidelines above still got more than 75% of the women to at least stop and talk to them for a second. And really, that's all the opener is trying to do. Stop them and get them to talk to you for a second. It's your conversation skills that get that second to turn into a minute and that minute to turn into an hour. Subsection, conversation skills. Developing conversation skills is a deep topic, and for the sake of this book, I'm only going to gloss over the most important topics and advice that's easiest to implement. If you'd like to pursue your conversational skills even further, check out the further reading section. The topics that we'll cover in this section are using effective language, questions versus statements, creating endless conversation topics, and storytelling, and also the basics of emotional connection. Using effective language. This is the easiest quick fix that you can apply to your communication skills. Using effective language means speaking what you mean with the fewest words possible while still maintaining your meaning and intent. Most people are guilty of this, but some more than others. This is where being a good writer can actually help you be a good communicator. If you're saying something in 4 sentences that could be said in 1, say it in 1. If you're saying something in 10 words that can be said in 4, say it in 4. In conversation and communication, quality always wins out over quantity. We would all rather hear 30 seconds of amazing communication than 10 minutes of mediocre communication saying the same thing. It also means removing like, you know, and other fillers from your everyday speaking. Removing all of these 100% of the time is often impossible. I still drop an or you know occasionally. But the more of these you remove, the more clear and coherent your speaking will be. Nothing screams a lack of sophistication like somebody who sprinkles like and throughout his stories constantly. Read the following 2 sentences aloud. So, I guess what I'm saying is like that I never really felt at home when I lived out there, you know, in California. The people just felt like superficial to me, and I didn't really like it a whole lot, I guess. Now compare it to this one. I never really felt at home in California. The people kind of felt superficial to me. I didn't really like it there. Don't speak like a robot either. You can still use all the inflections, tonality, and pacing on the second sentence without having to drop and like all the time. When you read it, you should be able to feel an immediate difference. The first one feels very casual, lackadaisical, even lazy and uninterested. The second one feels serious, stern, powerful, and clear. If you've made it this far into the book, I don't have to tell you why that's more attractive. Questions versus statements. Creating threads of conversation through statement is far more powerful than questions. This is because it assumes rapport. Friends speak to each other in statements, not questions. Questions are a polite way of requesting information of somebody. They create the frame that you desire something from her and she is obligated to fulfill your request. But statements make it so that you're constantly giving away information and value to the other person. Statements give you a wide array of topics to choose from. Only broad questions feel socially acceptable. Specific and eccentric questions come off as odd and unattractive. For instance, if you've been talking to a woman at a bar for a few minutes, saying, "I love olives in my drink. When I was a kid, I used to eat them straight out of the jar," is far more interesting than, "Do you like olives in your drink?" and waiting for her response. In fact, that question is just plain weird. But that statement is interesting, and what many women would consider cute. Questioning should be limited to a minimum. Often, asking her a question is unavoidable to get the conversation rolling. But once it's rolling, you should make them few and far between. Many guys talk to a girl in the interview style of conversation, which puts the girl on the spot, creates little rapport, and will drive her away. Instead of incessant questioning, you want to develop a skill called cold reading. Cold reading is a skill where you're able to intuitively know something about someone else without actually knowing it. It's like being psychic without the cheesiness. For our purposes, cold reading is just a way of creating interesting statements rather than questions, asking questions for information. You don't ask the question you want to know, but instead you make a mild prediction. Instead of asking her a question about herself, you guess the answer to your question and then state it. Here are some examples. "Where are you from?" translate to, "You look like a California girl." "What do you do for work?" translates to, "You seem like a creative person. I bet your job is interesting." How do you guys know each other? Translates to, "You guys look like you've been friends for a long time." In each situation, the statement makes an educated guess and engages the woman far more than any question will. Instead of asking her about herself, you're telling her about herself. The only thing people love more than talking about themselves is hearing about themselves. So, what if you're wrong? That's the best part. A lot of guys worry about cold reading because they're afraid to state something incorrect. This is where human nature works in our favor. There is no failing with cold reading. With every cold read, one of three things will happen. You'll be wrong and she'll correct you. You'll be wrong and she'll ask you what made you think of that. Or you'll be right and she'll freak out at how perceptive you are. In the first result, she'll basically just answer the question you based your cold read on and forget that you were wrong. In the second result, you'll be wrong, but she'll be so intrigued by your guess that she'll create a deeper conversation thread about what you observed about her. Later in this chapter, we'll talk about the importance of creating the deepest threads possible. In the third result, the few times you get the cold read correct, she will most likely be surprised at how perceptive you are about her. This will generate a tidal wave of rapport immediately and impress her at the same time. Here are examples of a cold read situation with all three different responses. Me. "You look a bit bookish. You must be a student around here." Her. "No, I'm not, but I do love to read." Me. "You look a bit bookish. You must be a student around here." Her. "No, what made you think of that? Is it my glasses? I just got them." Finally, me. "You look a bit bookish. You must be a student around here." "Yeah, I am. Is it that obvious?" You should cold read as much as possible. Anytime you're asking a question that requires a factual answer, take a stab at the answer instead of asking. One night, I met a girl from Chicago. I took a blind guess at which university she went to and was right. She couldn't get over how perceptive I was for a good 5 minutes. She asked me how I knew, and I told her I could tell she was on the intellectual side, although I figured she probably moved because the school was located in a bad part of the city. Everything was dead on despite being educated guesses. From that point on, she engaged me completely in conversation and was more excited to hang out with me again. Besides that, creating conversations out of statements protects you from blanking. You know, when you talk to a woman and all of a sudden the conversation dies and you have no idea what to say? You're sitting there awkwardly, and the more uncomfortable you feel, the harder it is to come up with something. Eventually, you blurt out something boring, like, So, where do you live? Using statements can prevent this a great deal. Instead of fishing for a new conversation based on a generic question, you can simply comment about something or observe something. Never underestimate the power of non sequiturs. I'm thinking about quitting drinking. A car almost hit me on the way here tonight. My roommate eats peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwiches. It's disgusting. I've always wanted to visit Africa. These will sometimes come across as random, but that's because they are. They're whatever thoughts are popping into your head at that moment. It's better to be random and interesting than predictable and boring. Don't be afraid to just blurt something out. This works because, unlike questions, statements require no investment from the other person. You can say whatever you want, and there's no implicit expectation for her to generate conversation as well. Speaking in statements in this fashion, to generate spontaneous conversation, is important in that it forces you to share yourself with her. When you simply ask a girl questions, you aren't giving any information about yourself, so it's harder for her to trust you and build rapport. But if you simply state a fact about yourself and then talk about it, you're now sharing yourself and giving her a chance to chime in with her input as well. The amazing thing about speaking in statements is if you do it correctly, she will begin to ask you questions. This may not seem like a big deal, but it actually reorients the entire interaction. As I mentioned earlier, whoever is asking the questions is subcommunicating a desire to learn more about the other, i.e. interest, i.e. they're attracted to them. If she is constantly seeking information from you, you now have the power to control the interaction. You control the information in the conversation. Endless conversational topics. In every topic of conversation, there are countless opportunities to jump off onto other topics. There are countless word associations to be made. For instance, let's assume you're talking to a woman and she says, "I never liked that club. I went there on my birthday last year and I don't remember anything past midnight. I woke up on my friend's kitchen floor." This is loaded with opportunities to take the conversation in new directions. You could relate to any of the following: the club she doesn't like, what you did on your last birthday, the last time you got blackout drunk, a story relating to waking up somewhere unusual. Any and all of these topics will be relevant and interesting in the conversation. If you don't already do this, it's a habit you need to ingrain in yourself, just as comedians ingrain off-the-wall word associations. Here are a series of examples of statements that women make, and then I've underlined the jump-off points. Think of them as intersections in which you can choose which direction to move the conversation. As you read through these examples, try to come up with a statement to relate to each jump-off point. This will help teach you to be more prepared to speak about any topic on the spot. Example number one. I go to Harvard right now, but I want to move out back west. The weather's too cold up here. I have underlined Harvard, move out back west, weather's too cold. Those are all jump-off points. Second example. I'm here with my friends Steve and Carrie. They've been dating for 6 months. They fight like a married couple. Underline my friend Steve and Carrie. Underline dating for 6 months. And underline fight like a married couple. Example number three. We work together downtown in the district. It's all right, but I'm looking to change careers. Underlined work downtown. Underline change careers. Fourth example. We were at this party last night. It was crazy. The cops ended up busting it, and some drunken kid got arrested. Underlined party last night. Underlined cops busted it. Underlined drunken kid got arrested. Those are all the jump-off points if you want to go back and listen again. Try rereading through these examples, and at each underlined word or phrase, try to immediately come up with a thought or response about it. For example, I see Harvard and I think of how one time I visited there and their campus looks like a palace. I also think of friends of mine who went to Harvard. These are both legitimate places to take the conversation. Once you become confident at this, you'll notice that this is the way in which every conversation flows. Conversations only end when one person says something to which the other person has no jump-off points. This is what happens when a conversation dies. If you teach somebody to recognize jump-off points and take advantage of them as soon as possible, you'll be able to sustain a conversation with almost anybody indefinitely. Combining this skill with the ability to cold read and create conversational threads out of thin air by making statements, and you'll literally develop the skill to begin and control any conversation with anybody for any length of time. This skill is imperative to your success with women. Everything you do to attract and interest women lies on the foundation of strong conversational skills. Teaching a shy and reserved guy strong conversational ability will immediately translate into improved results. storytelling. Human beings, by default, are enwrapped by stories, or more specifically, a story arc. Politicians use them to campaign, teachers use them to explain important concepts, comedians use them to make us laugh, and we use them constantly in our day-to-day interactions. But what you probably didn't notice is that the best communicators you know are fantastic storytellers. Have you ever had a friend who would start telling you about something and it just seemed to go nowhere? Like, they'd start to tell you about their trip to Chicago, and after describing the hotel and maybe mentioning the concierge, the story just went nowhere. Or have you ever known someone who consistently makes jokes that don't completely make sense, or most people don't ever seem to get it? Or maybe you're one of these people. Do people ever stop paying attention to you mid-story? Or do you ever have trouble making others laugh, intentionally? Chances are, these people, or you, aren't following a strong story arc. For whatever reason, humans have evolved to be absolutely fascinated when information is communicated in a certain pattern. This is true for just about any culture or background. There are three main points of a story arc. The setup. The setup is exactly what it says. You're setting the scene and the context for what you're about to say. It's the foundation of what's about to be told. And if you don't set up properly, then your stories, jokes, and ideas will all seem to be random. People will consistently comment that you're really random, weird, or off the wall. Content or conflict. After setting up what you're going to talk about, you need to get into the actual content. This can also be the conflict in your story. Whatever it is, it's something that causes tension and expectancy. The content of your story needs to be intriguing and hook people into wanting to know what will happen next. If you don't build much tension with the content of your stories, you'll find people losing interest or get the feeling like you ramble on a lot. Resolution. The resolution releases the tension from the conflict or content. Resolutions can come in forms of punchlines for jokes, conclusions for ideas, or just closures for a generic story. People who don't resolve their stories and ideas will often get blank stares when they're finished speaking, or people ask them, "And?" not really realizing that the story is finished. Here are a couple examples. So this is the setup. When I was in college, my first roommate had a funny habit whenever he got drunk. He'd basically turn into a narcoleptic. He'd spontaneously fall asleep in strange places at random moments. Here's the content or conflict. Well, literally, the first night I knew the guy, he and I go out to some orientation party. We meet a couple girls and go back to their dorm with them. He and I are totally drunk, and I notice that he's kind of stopped talking to his girl and is dozing off in the corner. It's kind of weird, but it was like 3 a.m., so whatever. Suddenly he says he's going to go and gets up and leaves. I think nothing of it until I go home. I wake up the next morning, and he's still not back. Hours pass, and I start to get worried. Here's the resolution. Turns out that the guy went out to the hallway lobby, laid down on the floor, and slept there the whole night. But not only that, he left his jacket in the girl's room. So at like 9 in the morning, he had to sneak back in, wake her up, and take his jacket back. It was pretty hilarious at the time. But yeah, that was my college roommate. Often adding a line like, "Yeah, that was my college roommate," is good because it indicates that the story is finished and that you're finished speaking. Here's another example. Setup. I knew I wasn't meant for the 9-to-5 world almost immediately. Out of college, I took a nice job at a prestigious bank downtown in Boston. Conflict and content. I hated it from day one. In fact, I remember thinking about 3 hours into the first day, "I wonder how long I have to work here before I can quit." Resolution. My next thought was, "This is probably a bad sign." Notice that I allude to the conclusion in the beginning of my story. This is called foreshadowing and often helps people follow along. Also notice that it really doesn't matter how long or short each component of the story is, as long as you convey the correct information. Another example. When most people talk about a crazy city, I don't think they've ever been to South America. I lived down there for a few months last spring, and you see things every week that are just beyond reality here. It's the setup. Like one night, we hopped into a cab to go to another nightclub. It was a Tuesday at about 4 a.m. The taxi driver promptly turns around and asks us if we'd like to try some of his cocaine. We politely refuse, so the cabbie says in Spanish, "Fine, more for me." He then proceeds to do lines of coke while driving 50 miles an hour down the highway with his knees. It's the content of conflict. We all thought we were going to die that night. Resolution. In this case, a punchline. All true stories, by the way. In the last section, we talked about jump-off points in conversation, and that's how we learn to relate to one another in conversation. The example showed jump-off points in individual sentences. Well, in real life, people speak in more than sentences. They speak in to each other in stories. So you want to develop the ability to formulate entire stories around jump-off points, as well as notice jump-off points within entire stories. This is actually much easier than it sounds, and you probably do it naturally with your friends and family in a lot of situations. Yet, the idea is to just do it consistently and naturally with anybody, including attractive women. Relating and connecting. The final goal of a successful conversation is to actually make a personal connection with the woman you're talking to. When you're talking to a woman, there are only two real subjects of conversation, her and you. Everything you speak about should be, in some way, revealing your identity to her or her identity to you. This uncovering of identity is what creates a sense of connection. The greater connection you create, the more she'll want to spend more time with you, and vice versa. Making a connection requires three steps: being open about yourself, getting her to be open about herself, and then relating to her experience. Most guys have trouble talking about themselves, period. The only times they usually feel comfortable talking about themselves is maybe around their mothers or once they've known somebody for a few years. As a rule, we tend to be fairly shut off from those around us. Men feel more comfortable talking about things outside of themselves: sports, politics, cars, movies, girls, etc. Women, on the other hand, are only engaged when they are talking about themselves or each other. This is why they're constantly gossiping, creating drama, or people watching. To connect with a woman, you need to learn to communicate in this way. Sorry, but talking about politics won't create a unique connection with a woman, unless she's extremely passionate about it. So what do you talk about? How do you talk about yourself openly? When I tell guys, talk about yourself more, open up, a lot of them go out and say, I'm from New York, I like baseball, I'm 27. It's good that they're sharing themselves now, but that's a bit shallow. Take out a sheet of paper and write down three things for each of the following: your passions and favorite things to do, your dreams, ambitions, and life goals, the best, worst things that have ever happened to you, your childhood, family life, and upbringing. Now, go back to each item you wrote down and talk about it to yourself for 1 minute. Try to be as detailed and honest as possible. It's not as easy as it sounds. Even when you're alone sometimes, talking about these subjects makes you a little uneasy. Most men feel a bit vulnerable when talking about these topics, especially to women. That's the point. Be willing to share any part of yourself to anyone at any time on any level. You have nothing to lose by sharing yourself. At the worst, she'll reject you, and, well, she's going to reject you if all you do is talk about sports and your job anyway, so what's the problem? What you'll actually find is that when you share something deeper and personal about yourself, it will be genuine and she'll immediately respond to that by being genuine herself. Ideally, sharing these aspects of yourself will encourage her to share them in herself. You want to get her to talk about her passions, her ambitions, her best experiences, and her most vulnerable experiences. These are the topics that define us as humans and make us unique, i.e. different from the last 20 guys who talked to her. These are the topics of conversation that will make you stand out. Why? Because she knows you. Not your favorite sports team, not the party you went to last week, but you. And when she knows you and remembers you, she'll make sure to pick up the phone when you call and meet up with you again. In conclusion, when it comes to conversations, there's a lot to cover. Reading this last section may have been overwhelming for you. If so, just remember, break it up into little chunks, practice one thing at a time. If conversation is a particular issue for you, and you'd like help structuring it and working on it, then check out some of the resources in further reading section at the end of the book. But now that we've covered how to hold a dynamic and interesting conversation, let's talk about how to spice it up. Let's talk about humor. Humor is an integral part of being an attractive man. In polls all over the world, when women are asked to rate the most attractive quality in a man, a strong sense of humor almost always wins out. There's an old saying, if you can make a woman laugh, then you can get her to laugh right into bed. Now, although humor is not a cure-all for anybody's dating problems, it's definitely important. The reason is that a strong sense of humor conveys all the right traits to a woman. A man who can laugh easily at the world and who isn't afraid to laugh at the world conveys a low level of neediness. He also makes women feel good around him. A man who is very serious and very unable to laugh at himself or the world conveys that he is heavily invested in the perceptions of the world around him and is therefore needy. Your specific type of sense of humor isn't so important as much as that you have one. Obviously, different women will respond strongly to different types.